Jane Goodall, one of the world's most esteemed and inspirational conservationists, died Wednesday in Los Angeles. She was 91. She earned scientific stature and global celebrity by studying and living with wild chimpanzees in East Africa in the 1960s. She was one of the most famous scientists of the 20th century and opened the door for more women to pursue scientific careers. I spoke with Jane Goodall on this program in 2009 around the publication of one of her books, Hope for Animals and Their World, How Endangered Species Are Being Rescued from the Brink. We air a portion of that conversation today in memoriam.
You're celebrated as a primatologist for discovering all of these things about chimps, and now you're known for environmental outreach as well. How does this all relate back to the chimpanzees? When we talk about hope for animals and their world and the great strides that have been taken with these endangered species, how does that all relate to your earlier work with the chimps?
Well, I could give you two answers there. One is that when I first went out to Africa, chimps weren't my only, I mean, they weren't my passion. I didn't ever expect that I'd have the luck to study something as exciting and amazing as a chimpanzee, because I didn't even have a degree. So I went out there because I loved animals. I wanted to work with animals. And our youth program in particular is giving me the opportunity to inspire kids to care about black-footed ferrets or whooping cranes or giant pandas or some of these other amazing animals in the book. And I know that they're going to pick up my passion and do something with it, because they're doing it already. So that's one. But the other links back to what I said about our Take Care program. And that is that right across Africa, right across the developing world, we find that forests are disappearing, that people are living in poverty, that animals are being hunted for food. And you realize that you can't help the animals. I couldn't help the chimps unless I helped the people. And helping the people just around Gombe Stream wasn't sufficient. We needed to help people around other chimpanzee habitats. And to save the chimps, you have to save the forests. And then you realize that so many of the developing world's problems can be laid to our unsustainable lifestyles in the West and our materialistic, greedy way of thinking about things and wanting to acquire more than our share. So it all links together, and this is why I'm passionate about working with youth, because if they lose hope, we may as well give up. And that's why I wrote the book, so that we can inspire youth to realize, yes, if you work hard and don't give up, you can make a difference.
I have two questions for you in that regard. And one is, when you talked about going to Kenya and that love of animals that you had, and here you are without a degree. And this, of course, is a time when young women and girls just didn't do that type of thing. But then you're led to Lewis Leakey, and you are working and looking and examining animal behavior. What an amazing experience.
Yes, I know. Wasn't it absurd, really? But it was. I put it down to my upbringing, my amazing mother, so that when everybody at school was laughing at me and saying, you'll never get to Africa, because it was a different world then. Africa was the dark continent. We didn't have enough money for even a bicycle, let alone a car. And World War II was raging, and girls didn't do that sort of thing. But my mother would always say, if you really want something, you work hard, you take advantage of opportunity, and if you never, ever give up, you find a way. So I did.
You mentioned the Gombe National Park and flying over it not long ago. And, of course, your work lasted for so long and so many decades and helped us as a people understand more about our own evolutionary history. At what point in your life did you know it was time to move on, to move away from that?
Oh, it happened very suddenly. I went to a conference in 1986. For the first time, all the scientists, or most of them, who were studying chimps in Africa and a few in non-invasive situations in captivity came together for 4 days to a conference called Understanding Chimpanzees. And there was a session on conservation, and one on conditions in captivity. And it was so shocking to me to see right across Africa how chimp habitat was being destroyed. They were being caught in wire snares. They were being hunted for food. And in medical research labs, they were in 5 foot by 5 foot cages. And so I went to the conference. You know, by then I had my PhD. I was writing papers. I was spending most of the year out in the field. It was an ideal dream life. But after that conference, I couldn't anymore. I knew I had to start repaying. And so I left as an activist. Just like that. Boom.
Was it hard at all for you to be away from Gombe, to be away from the chimpanzees?
Well, to be honest, I didn't even think that way. I mean, yes, but I've got Gombe inside me. I can close my eyes and be in the forest. I know that wonderful young people and Tanzanian field staff are carrying on with the research. I can learn about it. And I would no longer be happy there because I feel that I can be more useful away, and that if I hadn't left, maybe the chimps would have gone. That may not be true, but sometimes I feel it might.
You have talked about poverty as one of the reasons for habitat destruction and the disappearing chimps. Is this the case with other species as well? When we talk about this book, Hope for Animals and Their World, and how endangered species are being rescued from the brink, those species, are they impacted by that poverty as well?
In many cases, the answer is definitely yes. But on the other hand, just as severe an impact is the vested interests of big corporations or timber companies, agriculture, and so forth, who ruthlessly exploit wilderness areas to extract natural resources. And these are non-renewable natural resources, so that when the country in question has sold that piece of land, then it's gone from their people forever. So it's not just the wilderness that suffers, it's the local people as well.
You spoke a moment ago about the children and speaking to them. And for you as a young girl, you had that passion. What lit that fire in you, do you think?
I apparently was born with it. You know, I loved animals from when I was very tiny. As I say, I had a supportive mother. We had, after the war started, we went to my grandmother. We had a great garden. You'd call it a yard, a backyard. We call it a garden with trees. And although we didn't have any money, this piece of, well, small really, but, you know, it did have trees and flowers. And I could climb trees and feel up near the birds. And books, like Tarzan, Dr. Doolittle, early books about African explorers, all of these things helped to feed my passion.
That passion has done so much for so many animals, for so many people. What are you proudest of that you have accomplished through your great work?
You know, I don't know. I think I'm very happy that more people think about animals the way they really are, you know, with feelings and personalities. And I know that because people write and tell me. But I also love it when kids write from some poor neighborhood or some rural part of the developing world, and they say, you've taught me that because you did it, I can do it too.
Dr. Goodall, thank you so much for your compassion and your amazing courage and your dedication and devotion to animals and their world. It's an honor to have you on our program this morning.
Well, it was lovely talking to you. Thank you so much, and goodbye for now.
Jane Goodall, scientist, friend of all animals, inspiration to many humans, died yesterday. She was 91. We spoke with her in 2009. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.